This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You know, North Carolina has more small towns than any state in the country other than Pennsylvania. And it's been able to maintain the so-called small town state or remain that way because of the many miles of highway connecting dispersed towns to one another. The ongoing documentary project Anytown USA has been traveling all the corners of this state, many corners, for the past 10 years. Actually, there are only four corners of the state. They're not really corners. They're kind of edges. Anyway, they've been all over the state for 10 years, and they've been documenting the lives of many of North Carolina's small towns and the people who live there. This year, a team of students from Duke's Center for Documentary Studies traveled to Roseboro, a town of just more than 1,200 people in eastern North Carolina's Sampson County. And we are going to be joined by three of this year's filmmakers in a moment. But joining me first is the creator and director of the project, Randy Benson. Randy's a filmmaker and an instructor at the Center for Documentary Studies. Randy, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks so much for having us.
Tell us about the origins of this project.
Well, like you said, North Carolina is a state of small towns. And since the 90s, as you know, that small towns have been
experiencing
the loss of industry,
right.
And it's very difficult to keep young people in the small towns. But North Carolina is so unique that we've been able to preserve, through the many miles of highways, our small towns and also the regional flavor throughout the state. So, you know, people think we just have one southern accent. And I would say that there are about 80 accents in North Carolina.
So tell us about Roseboro in particular. Where is it and what distinguishes it from other towns?
Well, Roseboro is a town about 30 miles, about a half an hour east of Fayetteville. And like so many other small towns, Roseboro had a thriving, it's a town of 1,201.
And one.
That's very important.
Okay. Yeah,
Jeff over at the...
The most recent arrival.
Right. But like so many small towns, they experienced loss of industry, flight to urban areas. But they have been able to hold on and redefine themselves just by working together. And what makes the difference in these small towns is the leadership, the local leadership, and that's over generations. So a lot of stories within Roseboro come from the pre-Civil Rights Act era, and a lot of the same people are involved in keeping Roseboro the town that it is.
Well, and that leadership, I think, is expressed in Roseboro's unique place in history of race relations, right? Particularly with regard to its neighbors. Tell me more about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it does come from the leadership. Roseboro didn't really experience the racial strife of so many other towns simply because of principals, the religious community, and community leaders just stepping up to nip everything in the bud before it brewed, before it exploded.
Yeah. So you've got this interesting story. And again, I think just in the three examples that we're going to talk about this afternoon, you can see examples of a couple of things that characterize small towns. One, the leadership and the way in which people come together over big public issues, and also the characters and the individuals who make a place unique. And for that, I will turn to Leslie Baker. She's currently pursuing a certificate in documentary studies at CDS. Leslie, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Tell us about your film and its subject.
Sure. So my film is about Buddy Melvin, a lifelong Roseboro resident who's spent the past 20 years constructing a 13,000 square foot treehouse in his backyard.
Let's say that again. 20 years constructing a 13,000 square foot.
13,000 square foot.
Treehouse.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to get this picture. And you will never be able to picture it unless we see your film or
sure.
Travel to Roseboro, because it's not a platform with a railing. It is a house.
It is a house on a platform that started as one room, And I think Buddy never really intended for it to get any bigger than that. Started as a bar around a tree, and then he just kept building on and on until it was just out of control.
Let's hear what Buddy has to say about his treehouse.
You have a treehouse? I said, yeah. Well, I don't try to explain to him about the treehouse because I can't. Because in your mind, you have a picture of a treehouse. And that's far from this. So there's no meaning to me. I just say, you need to come and see it. At the beginning, the tree was in a garden. My daddy had a garden out there. One day I just said, I believe I'd try to build me a treehouse. And I was grown, so I said, well, I want a treehouse for grown people. I didn't want a kid's treehouse. So I asked this lady for a tobacco barn, and she said, yeah. And that's when I started.
That's a clip from Buddy and the Treehouse, a film by Leslie Baker, and that's part of the Anytown USA documentary project that documents the lives of North Carolinians in small towns throughout the state. The film screen at the Full Frame Theater in Durham this Thursday at 7 o'clock. Leslie Baker is with me now. So tell us more about what you learned in the process of putting this film together.
Well, the question I had entering this was why? Why do this? Why build a 13,000 square foot treehouse in your backyard, a structure that's larger than your actual home? And so yeah, I just continued to pursue that throughout the process. And what I found was that it was a meditative act for him. He could go to this place to be alone and to get away from his problems.
It really is a meditative place and an expression of when you hear him talk, an expression of kind of what's going on with him. A lot of memorabilia from the town and his own past are in this house as well, right?
Yes. So there's a sign from his father's store in there, and then he also has so many things, just thousands of things that people have given him over the years. All the wood in the treehouse is found wood from old tobacco barns or burned down houses. And so he's really an artist who brings found materials together to create this masterpiece.
Structurally, it is quite beautiful, and the ways in which, the ingenious ways in which light come through and various shapes and windows and that sort of thing, the way it's decorated. He has the scoreboard from his high school, and people have signed, right? He has them come and sign the wood. He's got memorials to those who have passed away. So it's quite a place. How long does he spend there every day? Do you have an idea?
He works all the time, but manages to go out there for a few hours every day.
Well, I want to move on and talk about the other two films, at least that we're going to preview today. First, I want you to meet Patrick Nichols. He's a director and filmmaker of 24 and 242. Patrick, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Hi, thanks. Excited to be here.
Tell us about your film.
Well, the title 24 and 242 is in reference to two state highways, NC-24 and NC-242, that run at an intersection right outside of the downtown area of Roseboro. And my film really highlights a construction project that's been almost 50 years in the making for the people of the town, with the expansion of Highway 24, and looking at kind of how that's impacted the towns and the potential negative impacts it could have had, and the town kind of banding together to try to alleviate some of their concerns.
Now, you meet them at the point where they have developed some concerns, but interestingly enough, what you said earlier, I think, is something we should highlight. Everybody's been anticipating this road. They've been talking about it for like 30 years, and they've wanted this thing. This is something they've all lived and dreamed would happen. Let's make this two-lane a four-lane. Hooray, hooray. So first of all, tell me more about that and what you found about the way people have been sort of dreaming and thinking about this highway.
Absolutely. One of the first scene in the film is an interview with an older gentleman named Houston Crumpler. He's lived in the town his whole life. He's about 80, I think. And he talks about he grew up in Roseboro, went away to college, came back expecting there to be a four-lane highway. And that was, you know, presumably 60 years ago, 65 years ago. And so people since the 50s have been warning people. Someone had had a quote that since the 50s, like don't buy that land or don't, you know, develop a new driveway, the state's going to come in and put in the highway, and that's all going to be for naught. And so that's been going on for, you know, 50 plus years at this point.
So finally they did, mm-hmm. and they came in and they said, here's what we're going to do. And then they showed them the plans. And when everybody looked at the plans, there was a kind of a giant uh-oh in the middle of those drawings, right?
Right. I mean, from funding to actually breaking ground itself took 12 years to be able to do all the studies and stuff. And around 2008, they had a design, but it wasn't until about a year ago, almost last summer, that the town leadership looked at the plans and realized that there was going to be this intersection that primarily safety concerns. That was the first thing that kind of came up. Looking at a lot of the truck traffic that has to do with the industry in that town, they have a pretty big industry dependent on large trucks going east, west, and north, south through this intersection. And then also thinking about the school system with student drivers traversing this intersection twice a day, every day, that school's in session.
Yeah, and you'd have to see a map to kind of understand how this works. But essentially, this is an intersection. It's going to be busy now because you've just made a four-lane highway. So now it's going to be a rough road to cross. Okay, put in a traffic signal. No, DOT's not going to put in a traffic signal. What? How are we going to get across? Well, you'll turn right and then make a U-turn and then come back and find the highway that you were right across from. And, of course, that was what had people worried, this kind of U-turn and trying to merge onto traffic, that sort of thing. Felt pretty dangerous to people.
Yes, absolutely. It's called a super street is the name given by DOT. And it's common throughout, you know, a lot of small town areas in North Carolina and used to a lot of success, but it gives a lot of preference to the fast-moving east-west right. highway and creates basically a barrier across the north-south street. And in this instance, it seemed like it was going to be really, really tough to safely traverse that intersection with all the U-turns and the fast speeds.
Spoiler alert, the town tries to get the DOT to change its mind. First try, fails. Second try, if they organize a little bit more, they actually succeed. And you talk to, you mentioned Houston Crumpler, who was surprised and gratified at the fact that after the town got together and had a couple of meetings, DOT changed its mind.
They don't normally have a lot of local input that would expose these types of liabilities to the state. They're designing the road in Raleigh, and we're sitting back here in our communities not knowing what they're doing. Not really caring what they're doing. We just know that they're doing their job and we're trying to live our daily lives. And then when you find out what they've designed and you realize that it won't work, you can finger point at people and say, you didn't do your job right. Well, that's not really fair. They didn't really realize the type of economy we had here, and so we had to expose that to them. And once that was exposed to them, that's when they backed up and said, we better refigure this thing. I was actually surprised that they stopped and said, let's look at this now. Let's don't wait for five or six people to be killed here or injured. I wasn't attributing anything to the people that actually are in charge. I was surprised because that's just the way bureaucracy works.
That's Houston Crumpler, who's the president of the Crumpler Plastic Pipe Company in Roseboro, North Carolina. He's talking in the film 24 and 242, part of this year's Anytown USA documentary project that documents the lives of small-town North Carolinians. Film's going to screen at Full Frame Theater in Durham this Thursday at 7. Patrick Nichols is the filmmaker. What did you learn from doing this film project, Patrick?
Two things. One, kind of the delicate ecosystem of a small town. I grew up in Raleigh, which I've never considered to be a big city, but certainly much, much bigger than Roseboro. And construction like this would be maybe a nuisance to people, but it seemed, talking to people in Roseboro, it was kind of an existential event for the future of this town. So that was really interesting to get that perspective. And also just kind of the bureaucratic nature. I mean, Houston Crumpler mentioned just kind of how bureaucracy works and seeing almost the geological time that these things take to come to fruition. And then how sort of the recourse that towns have, the control that they have and don't have over kind of the infrastructure and the future of where they live.
Well, joining me now is another participating student, editor, and videographer, Emily Frockling. Emily, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Tell us about your film.
Excuse me, I've been sick. Well, my film is about a resident called named Matilda West, who's spent her whole life in Roseboro. And it's really just a portrait of her. I was sort of expecting it to be about, she published several books with her students when she was a teacher, and I was sort of expecting it to be about that, but she was such a compelling character that I kind of decided to focus on her.
And one who had, I mean, folks in town knew her, they came to rely on her, the kind of town historian in some ways, and a woman who had never married and had taught all of her life. Let's listen to a clip from your film.
I regret never getting married. I regret that terribly, never having a family. I did want a family and to live what I would call a normal life like everybody else. But when you're the only lady in a town that does not have that privilege, it's tough. But I did enjoy teaching. That was my love. Am I through?
No.
Sorry.
This is so boring, though.
No, it's not. It's really not.
It's so boring.
Trust me.
Taking you behind the scenes a little bit, I assume that didn't make the final cut, but it's cool to listen to. I mean, the idea that you're going to take us behind the scenes. Tell us about that, too. You're documenting someone's life, and then you leave this little tale on to show us what that's like.
Actually, yeah, that did actually make the final cut. Yeah. That was my experience of her. Yeah. I was, like I said, I was going in there and sort of expecting it to be something different, but my experience sort of interviewing her and having her, you know, she repeated that so many times. This can't be interesting. Why are you asking me so many questions about myself? It was like pulling teeth, getting her to talk about herself, but her life is so interesting as a resident who's lived there, her whole life. I was trying to explain to her, and she was just, it was just hilarious. So I thought that would be really interesting to people.
It is. It's very revealing. And the idea of leaving that in, I think, does tell the kind of bigger story that you were looking for. So there's a public screening, and I just wonder what it was like. And maybe I will ask you, Leslie, what it's like to take your film to town and show folks, what you found and how you interpreted their lives.
I think it's a great experience. I think any town is so special because we tell stories about all kinds of people, all races, socioeconomic status, and we bring everyone together and share these stories. So, it really gives people a chance to get to know each other.
How did they feel about the film? Did you have a sense?
Yeah, so Buddy came out to the screening, and I could tell that some of the subjects were a little nervous, and I would be too if a film were being made about me and shown in Durham.
Emily, did Matilda feel any more like her life might have been any more interesting now that's framed in a film?
She was super excited. She kept saying she was like, "Oh man, I'm a big star now." But she actually didn't make it to the screening. But I promised her that we would have our own special screening whenever she was available.
Well, that is Emily Frockling, along with Patrick Nichols and Leslie Baker, and they are participants in this year's Anytown USA documentary project that documents the lives of North Carolinians in small towns throughout the state. Thank the three of you for being here. Good to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also with us, Randy Benson, who is a filmmaker and instructor at Duke Center for Documentary Studies, and he directs Anytown USA. Randy, thank you as well.
Thank you so much for having us.
All of this year's Anytown USA films about Roseboro, North Carolina, are screening at Full Frame Theater in Durham, North Carolina, this Thursday, 7 o'clock. We have the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to talk with the author of The Silver Linings Playbook about his latest novel. Looks at the transformative power of fiction. Stay tuned to the State of Things.